Welcome everyone to another fireside chat with the experts. I'm pretty excited about this one. We're going to be covering a topic that we get a lot of questions about, a lot of curiosity from different industries. The question is, can radiation damage my components? So we have Dr. Bill Cardoso here. He'll be speaking to us to answer this question. It's a complicated one, so it's good we have someone with a PhD here to get into the details of it and explain it to us. So go ahead, Bill.
All right, thanks, David. Thanks for the introduction. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for being here with us for another fireside chat with the experts. And yes, the question we're going to try to address today is if radiation can damage electronic components. And I'll let you start with some of the background. That's where I learned a lot about radiation effects on electronic components. That was a Fermi Lab, which is Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory. It's a particle accelerator in right outside Chicago. It's about 40 miles west of Chicago. Well, 40 miles east of Chicago in the middle of Lake Michigan. So it's got to be west of Chicago. And at Fermi Lab, we had a 6 mile long ring called the Tevatron that you can see here in this photograph. And the Tevatron was a particle accelerator. So there's a complex of smaller accelerators. This is the main ejector that produces protons and antiprotons that get successfully faster and faster. So when you get to the Tevatron, which is this big 6 mile long ring here, they are flying at very close to the speed of light. And what we do is we get them going around the ring in one direction, and then we get the antiprotons going in the opposite direction. And so the two clouds of particles, they keep flying over each other. And then in a couple of very specific places, namely the D0 here and CDF here and D0 further down the line, we merge them so they have a head-on collision. So we have these protons and antiprotons colliding at very, very fast speeds. And as a result, we have the shower subparticles. And with those subparticles, we can study quite a few things. The last thing we were looking for at Fermilab was the Higgs boson, which physicists say explains quite a bit of the dark matter and things that are missing that we can't account for in the universe. So these are some of the things that the group I was part of did at Fermilab. We designed this cameras that tracked the shower of subparticles. And as you could imagine, this electronics get subjected to an incredible amount of radiation, right? And much like satellites, the systems that have to be built with incredible reliability, because once you dig this electronics several floors underground, you can't maintain them. So if something breaks, it's going to be broken until the next shutdown, which might take 2, 3, 4 years, right? So radiation damage and radiation effects on electronics was something we took very seriously, and we did a lot of research to understand exactly how radiation would impact the lifespan of the components, the cables, the Kapton tape, everything that we used, PCB, printed circuit boards, and everything else we used on those electronics, because as I said, it was an incredibly high radiation environment. And at the same time, you couldn't fix them, right? So to give you an idea, to unplug this high definition cameras, if you will, was placed right on the beam. So the beam of protons and antiprotons would come through this pipe here. So we built this huge, building size particle detector. And once it was done, we just roll it into the beam. And several years later, we roll it out for upgrades and major maintenance. So the question is simple, right? can is radiation going to damage my electronics, my component, my, you know, whatever? Unfortunately, the answer is quite complicated. It's not only complicated, but it's also complex because it depends on a lot of things. So in this presentation, we're not going to answer the question, okay? If you're expecting to get a yes or no answer out of this presentation, just go to the next video right now or go do something else because you're not going to get a yes or no answer. What we're going to do today is to build up the and explain what are the parameters that are going to lead you to an answer, right? And we're more than happy to sit down with you if you do have questions. Contact us. We're going to give you our contact information at the end of this presentation so that you can call us and we can work through some of these questions to figure out if the electronic component that you're testing has a chance or not of being damaged by the radiation exposure you plan to subject that part to. So let's start with from the beginning, right? From the basics, which is types of radiation. Now, there are two main types of radiation we're going to be talking about here. Rays, let's call them rays and particles. Let's keep it simple, right? Rays and particles. Rays, like photons, and that's the most popular ones, are gamma rays and X-rays. That's what we do for a living, right? So those are rays, they're photons. And then you have particles. Stuff that we did at Fermilab, like I described a couple slides ago, those are all particles. Protons, antiprotons, other accelerators have electrons. And there's a major difference between a photon, as you can see here on this column, and particles, as you can see, protons and electrons. For example, protons are very heavy, very dense particles. They can't really travel very fast. Electrons, protons, they have quarks. They usually have three quarks. The quarks that can, it's a massive particle. It can transform into a gluon, and so protons can be very, very complex particles. Electrons, on the other hand, are point-like particles. They're much simpler. Some accelerators use electrons because they are, since they're point-like and very easy to study because the energy that you give to an electron is the energy that's going to take. Protons, we don't ever know what state the proton is, so you can't really always tell the energy of the proton. Physicists like to say that colliding protons and antiprotons are like colliding trash cans. While electron colliders are scalpels, right? The very precise, very fine research. And there's a reason why you do one or the other. Photons, they travel the speed of light because they don't have any mass, right? As you can see here, protons are heavy compared to electrons. Photons don't have any mass. That's the reason why particles have a very intimate and destructive relationship when they collide with matter, while X-rays and gamma rays, they have a different type of interaction. They tend to penetrate, right? So this, I really like to show this representation here, where you can see how alpha particles have a very limited penetration of matter. Usually a piece of paper can stop alpha particles from traveling. And that's the reason why americium 241, which is an alpha particle generator, radioisotope, is using your smoke detectors in your house. What you do is you put a sensor and americium 241 source, and that sensor is always getting radiation. So, okay, the path there is open. As soon as smoke goes in between, close the path and triggers the alarm. So phenomenal source of detection of smoke. And that's why you have to replace your smoke detector every so often because that emission source has a half-life that eventually doesn't work anymore. Beta particles have, you know, they are electrons, so they're smaller particles, and they, as a result, they have a better penetrating force. A piece of wood, I mean, a piece of metal can stop a beta particle with no problem. Gammas and X-rays, on the other hand, they have much better penetration power, and that's why you use them for inspection, for imaging, right? Gamma rays are very good, X-rays are very good for imaging because we can get them to penetrate through the matter, through your component. On the other side, you can create the shadowgram to give us the image or the shadow, a negative image of the component that you're looking at. So electromagnetic radiation, X-rays and gamma rays, particles, you have protons, neutrons, electrons, pions and muons and everything, a soup of letters afterwards of different types of particles that interact with matter. For the most part, damage happens with particles because particles have mass, and when you jam them against your component, they're going to damage something. At again, at the Fermi Lab, our main concern was protons and antiprotons and soup of some particles that came after that, those collisions, and they did quite a bit of damage to the components that we installed. And electromagnetic radiation is fairly docile to electronics. So before we get into the exposure from our X-ray machines, let's talk a bit what else or where else your parts, your electronic components are going to be subject to radiation. Starting with background radiation, right? We're all subject, as you know, to radiation 24/7. We have the concrete that we use in our construction has radioactive components, radioisotopes, they're going to be radiation, and the soil, and depending on what kind of soil you have, how much granite and some of the other materials on the soil can give you a higher or lower background radiation. So there are maps online you can check out that plot the or map the radiation, background radiation as a function of geography in the United States and other places in the world. Then on top of that, you have cosmic radiation. The atmosphere serves as a shield, right, from cosmic rays that come from stars that implode or galaxies that explode and emit a huge amount of radiation, many millions higher than any atomic bomb can produce. And that radiation travels around the across the universe, and the atmosphere is our shield, right? So depending on the altitude, you're going to have more or less of the shield, and as a result, more or less cosmic radiation being subjected to your components. And then on top of that, we have man-made radiation, right? Including inspection on airports. Every airport you're going to go through is going to X-ray your part, your components, your luggage, everything, right? Nowadays, you don't really have an option. You're going to get X-rayed. Even if you don't know, your components are going to get X-rayed. Ports of entry, all right? As you get in and out of the country, Customs and Border Protection, CBP, is going to use very sophisticated and very strong radiation portals to image the containers where your components are going to be shipped. The post office all around the country have X-ray machines that are constantly inspecting mail as it comes and goes. And same goes for every delivery company out there, FedEx, UPS, DHL, they all have radiation X-ray units to image. And that is it's ubiquitous. That's nothing you can avoid. It's how the flow of commerce is regulated and protected in the world nowadays. So security, quality assurance, fair analysis, counterfeit detectors, these are all some of the main applications that require putting radiation in or subjecting your components and your parts to a radiation. So part of the conversation, now that we have some of the basics of what radiation is, what type of radiations are impact components, how different radiations impact, impact electronics, let's go over how and what's the mechanism of damage, right? So there are, when you think about if radiation is gonna damage my component, the first thing you've got to figure out is what kind of radiation are you subjecting your component to. As we said before, particles have are much more destructive than photons. Larger particles have a much higher probability that they're gonna damage your component than smaller particles, protons against electrons. And finally, if you have, if you have photons, it's a much, much, much smaller probability that you're gonna have any damage. Then once you figure out what type of radiation you are considering, the next question you're gonna ask yourself is, what energy level are you gonna be working at, right? The more energetic the radiation, the higher the probability that you're gonna damage your component. Once you figure out the type of radiation and how energy you're gonna be talking about, in X-ray terms, the energy would be 80 kV, 100 kV, 160 kV, 50 kV, right? Watch how much energy those photons or particles are gonna have once they collide with your electronics. Then the next is radiation flux, which means is, how many of those particles or photons are gonna be hitting your component per second. In X-ray lingo, energy is kV, radiation flux is MA. How big, how much energy the photon has, radiation flux, how many of those photons you have hitting your component or going through your component every second. And finally, the fourth component, fourth leg on this chair is the exposure time. So what kind of radiation, how big it is, how much of it, and for how long you're gonna be exposing your component. You gotta know all these four parameters before we even start talking if you're gonna have damage or not. And when you talk about damage, there are three mechanisms of damage on electronics, right? You start with the bulk damage. Bulk damage is serious. It's very, very serious. We're gonna start with the most serious to the least serious, okay? The big one is bulk damage. Bulk damage is when you can transfer enough energy to the silicon atom that you can remove it from the crystal lattice, right? So it's, once, if you can do that, if you have enough energy to impact the crystal lattice, your silicon component is done. And I don't know if any X-ray inspection system in the market, that has enough energy that's capable of applying bulk damage to electronic components. So bulk damage is very common when you're talking in particle accelerators, where particles, if they are, you know, the gig electrovolt, like we do kilovolt, right? Which is thousands of volts. Gigavolt, it's billions or millions of volts. That's when you start talking about bulk damage. And again, in particle accelerators, what you do is you figure out how much radiation your components is capable of taking before it gets damaged. And you just figure out how long, what's the lifespan or expected lifespan of the component. So if you want to run, if you figure out electronics can survive 5 years, and your experiment is expected to run for 2 years, said, okay, we're fine, because this is likely gonna die after our experiment is scheduled to be over. Surface damage, on the other hand, as the name suggests, is when you have ionized radiation going through the silicon oxide, you basically build up over time enough charge to change the characteristics of the silicon oxide. Very common to change threshold of transistors, right? So what happens over time, very common to see, over time, you have enough electron hole pairs created on the base of a transistor. And what you do is you change the threshold. So as time goes by, all of a sudden, some of the transistors in your memory, for example, stop working, right? Because now the threshold is here and you're putting your signal here. Your threshold started here, you know, on off was here, everything was working beautiful, electron holes accumulate, your signal is here, threshold is there, before you know, your a section of your transistors don't work anymore. It's a pain in the neck, and that's destructive. Once it's done, it's done. The last one, it's a SEU, single event upset. Single event upset, very common in satellite applications and also particle detectors. This is one when a radiation, a particle has enough energy to flip the state of a transistor, for example, right? That's called a single event upset. So what happens is you going back to the base of that transistor we were talking about, you set it to a flip and you have a renewable radiation to deposit energy on the base of the transistor to make it to a flop. So instead of flip, you flop, and you can flip the state of that specific transistor. Now, usually, if single event upset is a recoverable defect. In other words, if you just override again, that transistor goes back to its initial or correct state. And one of the standard ways to deal with this problem is to use a triple mode redundancy. So that means that instead of putting one transistor, you put three transistors in very critical locations, meaning that you always take the results of two out of three. So you have a voting system for each flip-flop. So if one gets flipped, one gets upset, the other two can give you the right result, right? So the probability that three or two will be flipped at a time is extremely low. And you measure, calculate the probability that's gonna low, figure out where you're gonna put those transistors. And with triple mode redundancy, you can really mitigate single event upset. So the point here is that radiation is everywhere and your components are gonna be exposed to quite a bit of radiation in a daily basis, if you want it or not. Mariam Ortiz, our VP of manufacturing, gave a really nice presentation where she went over safety of X-ray systems. And she went over some of these units, MRO hour. So I highly recommend you go check her presentation if you need some clarity what MRO hour means and how much radiation the FDA recommends or sets as a limit for safety in the country. We are bombarded by a soup of particles and photons on a daily basis. And at cruise altitude, like you were saying, on this plane, you're gonna be subject to about 0.6 mAh of radiation. One interesting experiment I've done a few times, get yourself a radiation detector, a Geiger counter, and bring it on the next flight, and you'll be able to see it changes as you take off and you cruise at 35,000 feet. So, as we said before, any type of cargo is gonna be inspected with not only kilovolts, but sometimes mega electron volts, right? So mag in millions, then giga in billions. So kilovolts, thousands, megavolts, MeV, you're going to be in the millions, and then giga electron volts are going to be in the billions. So a lot of the cargo scanners are 6 MeV or 90 MeVs, so millions of volts, not kilovolts like we do. So it's not uncommon to have that specific component that you're really concerned about putting in your X-ray machine. It's already being inspected, but a bunch of radiation generating device that you don't even know, right? So you got to be very careful about that. It's very easy that exposure of all these devices combined can accumulate to hundreds and hundreds or even thousands of MR. The device we use for counterfeit detection, which is failure analysis and counterfeit detection, that's mainly where we use our X-ray machines for in the component arena. They're going to be between 80 and 160 kV. You don't really need more than 160 kV to look at an electronic component. And we're looking at exposure times even lower than 200 milliseconds at a time, depending on the component you have. So if you're running your component, imagine you're going to be looking at a component for a second or less at 180 kV, you're going to be looking at 35 MR of total dose, right, for that specific component. So in the big scheme of things, based on all the numbers I've given you before, this is very, very little radiation, right? We've got to agree with that. So based on those parameters that I gave before, right, type of radiation, the energy, flux, and the time, you want to minimize all those four parameters to give you the least amount of radiation possible exposure in your component. So what you do is you automate your system, and that's why we've been very successful at offering our customers fully automated X-ray inspection systems, because you expose each component at the least amount of time possible with the least amount of radiation possible, and you let a computer vision program make some of the decisions, so you don't have to have a human being looking at a monitor figuring out if something is pass or fail. A Boeing 737, for example, if it has a lifespan, let's say 50,000 hours, we're looking at over 30,000 MR just due to background radiation, plus everything else that's going to be exposed to for regular inspections, right? For X-ray inspections that are applied to the fuselage and other parts of the airplane, which are regular on the maintenance of this aircraft. So I hope we're able to give you an overview of how radiation and why radiation can damage electronic components, and how little relative radiation X-ray machines actually apply on radiation components that end up. It's hard to say that there will be no damage ever, right? Because we know enough not to make blank statements like that. But what we want to do is to invite you to a conversation. If you have any concerns, please give us a call and we can work through this problem. Okay, thanks for your time. I think we have time for a couple of questions, David.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. That was very helpful. A lot of detail there. Got a couple of questions. Looks like we got 2 minutes left here. One is asking about the energy to distance ratio, right? You gave us those four factors causing the damage to component. Is distance a factor there? If it's an 80 kV source running at full power, is that just the number we use?
Yeah, that's a good question. And thanks for bringing it up. Distance is definitely a consideration here because, as you know, radiation drops 1/r². So the distance is going to be inside that flux information parameter that we discussed, right? So the more distance you have, the lower the flux you're going to have on your part, especially because we have this cone beam, right? So the flux you have in your source goes down 1/r² relative to the distance to the source. Very good question.
Another question along the same lines. If I have a populated board in an X-ray inspection system, I'm panning around the board for about 5 minutes. Do I need to calculate that 5 minutes as the exposure time, or is that going to be something less than that?
So we have a cone bean, right? Let's start there, which means that the radiation is going to reduce exponentially as you move away from the center point on the source. Sources, so that's data point one. Data point two is our sources have a specific angle of the target, which means that the cone beam has a very specific shape. And that shape is determined by the angle of the target on the source that reflects the electron beam that hits the target. In other words, that angle can be 20 degrees, can be 40 degrees, can be 90 degrees for a wide beam source. So based on that angle, you can understand how much of your components on the board have been radiated or exposed to radiation, right? So for applications that are really concerned with the radiation exposure of the neighboring components on the board, what do we do is we collimate. In other words, we minimize the exposure to neighboring components as we're expecting the object under study. Does it make sense? So it's a way to, basically put a canopy and a shield and protect all the neighbors that we're not looking at the specific time, and we only expose what we're interested in at specific time, thus minimizing radiation to the neighbors.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. Really appreciate answering those questions for us. That's all the time we have for today. If you have any more questions, give us a call, email us, or if you're watching this on YouTube later, go ahead and comment below. And we're looking forward to having just a Q&A session in July sometimes, where we'll get to some of these questions that we weren't able to get to in our previous chat. So thank you all for joining us. Really appreciate it. And next week, we're looking at another good chat titled 10 Ways to Find Counterfeit Electronic Components Using X-Rays. So be sure to join us again next week. Thank you.
Thank you.